If you're going to make a promise in any company, you have to know your company culture. You have to know what your company is good at. And if you have a very serious company, you can't have a funny brand. So don't try. In other words, think of what you're offering and make sure your company has the DNA or the strengths or the businesses to deliver it.
Helping you create loyal customers and loyal employees all through the power of simplicity. This is the Simple Brand Podcast, now heard around the world, including Star City, Arkansas. I'm your host, Matt Lyles, and this week I'm talking with Alan Adamson. I was actually excited to be able to bring Alan on, as I've known him for over a decade. In my previous time at FedEx, we did a lot of work with Alan when he was chairman over Landor Associates. They're a global brand agency that's helped shape a number of the world's biggest brands. Today, Alan's the co-founder and managing partner of Metaforce, a consultancy that takes a disruptive, multidisciplinary approach to help brands grow. He's also an adjunct professor at the Berkeley Center for Entrepreneurship at NYU Stern School of Business. And Alan's the author of a number of best-selling brand strategy books, including his latest, Seeing the How, transforming what people do, not buy, to gain market advantage. Now, I know you've heard me say this, but it always bears repeating. The only way you can truly differentiate your brand is through the customer experience you deliver. Now, not only is it a way to differentiate brands, but when we think of any industry disruptions, you realize that that happened from one brand introducing an entirely new experience to that industry. Alan and I discuss his lessons to help you learn how you can innovate and differentiate your brand through the experience you deliver. And to make it even easier, we walk through Alan's 8 different lenses to help you better understand the best ways to innovate your experience based on your brand, your industry, and most importantly, your audience. So here it is. Here's my interview with Alan Adamson.
Hi, Alan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's great to see you. Gosh, you and I, we met and connected well over 10 years ago at my time at FedEx.
Yeah, it was always fascinating going down there and being an airplane guy and seeing the planes come and go and they, you know, how hard it is to get what you put on your front doorstep to the other doorstep seems like magic. But when you see what goes on down there, it's a lot of hard work.
It was always fascinating to me, especially to see all the details in everything that it took to get the package from its origin to its destination, along with all the information provided to the customer and everything else in between that we delivered along the customer experience.
Yeah, and knowing how hard it is to get me on an airplane from one destination to another, I can only imagine. I wish I was a FedEx box traveling sometimes, because I'm sure I'd arrive more promptly at my business meetings.
Well, you will probably recall this, but legal would be the first person to say, no, you can't do that.
Yes, I'll get out of my box and I won't try to close it from the inside.
Well, when we think about that time together, when I was focused on brand management, your time, your career focusing on brand and product, I'd like to understand from your perspective, how have you seen the way that brands differentiate themselves change over the years?
Well, the big change, that's a great question, Matt, is that when I started in a galaxy far, far away in a time long ago, I was at a company called Unilever, which makes consumer packaged goods. Dove soap is probably the one most recognizable. And my role there was, I was called a product manager. And my job was to figure out how to make the product more relevant and interesting and then sell it, target it at the right person, build marketing communications. But the whole focus was on the product. You know, does it make your face feel better on this side or this side? Do you look younger? Does it clean your hair better? And eventually they changed that to brand management as it became more about the story and less about the product, but still it was very product focused. But what's happened over the time since that long ago time is that the difference between one product and another is shrinking. So it's really hard to tell the difference. And even if I came up with a better mousetrap, and you know, I think Dove back in the day, maybe even today, was a better product. The time you have a better product till the time a competitor matches it or beats you is shrinking. So it's the end of, you can no longer go out and say, this is the best toothpaste because it will keep your teeth in your mouth longer. There are things like that, and there's so much parity that consumers are having a tough time differentiating. So marketers have had to move from just talking about how it contains face cream and makes your face softer to telling a story that goes beyond the product.
So there's a couple of ways that I think that, you know, we were taught to differentiate. You know, you can differentiate by your features. Hey, this is 10% better than the competitors. Right. Well, hey, that's better. Or you can differentiate or compete by price. Hey, this is cheaper. This is lower cost than the competitors.
Right. And those features, as you know, in the technology space, are called speeds and feeds. So if you're trying to sell somebody a new phone, you could say, look how many pixels it has, look how much memory, how long the battery. But as everyone knows, that consumers, you know, they're not going to take an Excel spreadsheet and say, this phone has battery life of 4 hours, this has 4.2. It's really hard to do that. And facts and numbers don't really, we don't make lots of decisions based on Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Looking at numbers. Some we do. Marketers have over the time had to reinvent how they talk about products. And so what you do is important, how you do it. And I think FedEx is a little bit of a how story because they figured out how to do something. But even that story is not that unique anymore. Then you get into who you are as a company, your personality. And some people buy products because they like them. What's become vogue recently is purpose. We do this because we want to make the world a better place. But that's also really hard to pull off, because a company's got to live it, and it's a long-term thing. But this new book I have, Seeing the How, is about just flipping it and seeing how can you fit your product or service or what you do into people's lives and make their life better, not just make the selling process more fun, but add some value to their life and make it easier, faster, better, more fun. Because if it fits in there and you can make that story, it will help you succeed.
Well, what does it mean to make somebody's life better?
You know, you can look at lots of the new startups that happened over the past 5 years. And at least in New York City, when I wanted to get transportation, I would go to a corner and wave my hand and hope, you know, some yellow car would stop. And Uber had a little new technology, but basically they took off the shelf, you had a smartphone. You know, they put together the network, but ultimately that changed how I did things. So now when I'm looking for transportation, I can still try to hail a yellow cab, but I can also say I want to be picked up at this point. And so lots of stuff is like that now, that these offers, even if I could go to Best Buy and buy a new pair of headphones, but I can also ping on my phone and say, I'm going to be there at 2 o'clock. Can you have them ready for me? And you just go to a pickup desk and you don't have to wait for a cashier. You don't have to wait to have somebody hand you the product. You can just walk by. And so simple things like that to say, look, it's the same headphones. It's the same store. But if you can make my life faster, easier, simpler, it's going to be an experience that means more to me.
If you think about like that whole journey right there, where you start thinking about or realizing, oh, you know what? I need some new headphones. Instead of taking that old approach of looking at, okay, what are all the headphones out there within this price range? What are all the features? How do I compare against all those? And taking all that time to then make your decision and then seeing, okay, now who sells that exact pair of headphones? And then having to figure out where you go to the store, make sure the store even has those headphones in the store, walk in, find the headphones, pick them up, you know, go through all that whole process. There are a number of people, a number of brands that have cut a lot of the steps out of that process.
Right. And made it easier, faster to do. I'm reminded of a story I recently talk about, which is it used to be that headphones, you can make a pretty easy decision on because it's not, for most headphones, it's not requiring you to take half your personal income and buy them. But I recently had to buy a couple of years ago a new washing machine. And I went to the store and there are lots of brands you recognize. They all sound pretty good. They all have, you know, nice shiny little dials. And it's really hard to make a decision. And the way in my generation, when you had a big purchase to make, you would sometimes look online and do research. And one of those places was Consumer Reports, and they would evaluate. But when you looked at Consumer Reports, it was even more complex. Do you want one that, you know, that is quiet, or do you want one that lasts longer and has two circles, or do you want one that cleans better, or do you want one that is smaller? And so even sorting out their evaluation was like reading a management consulting report. And then somebody new came into the market, started a company a couple of years ago called Wirecutter, and it was purchased by the New York Times. I'll go back to headphones. So you're looking at headphones, there are 1,000 headphones or 1,000 washing machines. But Wirecutter will cut to the chase. So if you're a runner and you want headphones, this is your pair. If you're doing a lot of listening to podcasts, this is your pair. If you want to use it for Zoom calls. And so same with washers. Here's one for apartments. Here's one for big houses. They just cut to the chase. And that's, again, thinking about the experience people want is they don't want you to spend forever telling you the pros and cons of each alternative and make you a headphone concierge. So it's thinking through the customer and realizing that how do you fit into their life and make it better?
For me, making my life better is making things easier and giving me back my time.
Right. I'll give you another quick example because it used to be the airlines only thought they had to, you know, get you on time, which is no easy task, from New York to Chicago. And then there was a period of time they thought their product was only getting you in the seat, handing you the peanuts, and then getting you off the plane safely, which is an important product. But now lots of marketers are realizing that that's a piece of it, but they need to think about how do they make your experience better. So I've spent a lot of time chatting with the folks at Delta, and they recently launched a couple of weeks ago an add-on to their app. And so the add-on is that when you arrive at the curb and get out of your car to go into the terminal, the app will then say, you're at gate A46. Now, you know, that's always been done. But then it will say, based on the TSA line or the regular line, based on the amount of distance from there to the gate, which could be longer than you think, based on the number of people walking the other direction, based on a line at Starbucks, you should leave. It's like Waze for you should leave, 14 minutes to, so again, you would think of that being important. But when you're in that situation and you get through the line and where's gate 844 and you realize, right, you need your running gear. So it's again, an example of a marketer stopping to be so myopic on their product and thinking of what's really important to that traveler, even though Delta can't control the TSA line. They can't control that they've been given gate 858, which is 3.4 miles. But so part of it is marketers need to zoom out from only, as we started talking about, how Delta offers the best peanuts or this firm has the best headphones, and figure out how do I help customers solve problems where my product can fit into their life better.
And it's taking a look at everything that customer goes through to get to that point where you're in the plane and then you land on time and then even those steps beyond.
Right.
And a lot of times I think customers are starting to see this based on everything else that they experience in their lives. So if I'm driving and I'm using Waze, or even if I'm walking downtown, and it shows me, here's the directions, here's the distance for me walking from this point to the other, I think, hey, like, I love that experience. I love that it can tell me that. And then if I'm in an airport, I'm like, well, Waze does this for me. Google Maps does this for me. Why can't you do this for me too?
When time is really critical.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it was interesting getting those types of stories. And part of it is marketers used to be looking at their product and say, how can I make these headphones more interesting to my customer? Or how can I make my deli more interesting to the people down the street? And occasionally they look at the other deli down the street and say, we're better than that deli. But, really thinking through how to look at the market differently and how to look at their customers and start there, as opposed to looking at your sandwich and saying, well, my turkey is an inch thick and my competitors are just under an inch. So I should tell them that.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not just about the turkey.
Right. And that's a hard thing for marketers to let go of, is that, yes, if you have a better product, certainly go there, because there are great products. And if you have the only electric car, then all you have to say, you have the only electric car. And if people want it, they'll buy it. But once you're one of 20 electric cars, and every car looks the same with the same coffee cup holder, then you have to look for different ways to think about how you can make yourself more relevant from an experience point of view, not so much that the car has this much range and is in blue with a yellow stripe.
Yeah. I like to think a lot of times when you get to that point, your customer really isn't just comparing you to those other cars. They're not comparing you just to your direct competitors. They're comparing the experience that they get with everybody else and saying, why can't you be more like this experience?
And the car companies are the perfect case of, they took what the engineering people did. They built the car and they were selling it. And then they really often did a terrible job of, once you bought it, if something went wrong, that's not my department. You call the service department and line up. And they are now mostly figuring out that if you have a lot of repairs and the repairs are miserable and the people aren't friendly and they don't tell you how long it's going to take or how much it's going to cost, it's going to hurt their repurchase. I'll give you another quick story. One of the other lenses, everything's become digital, but I encourage marketers to think digital in new ways, or how to think virtual. So I took my car to get service. Its first service was included at the dealership. Nice. And I took it in. And, usually you get a call saying, well, we found this, and this, and you always forward, X dollars. And you sort of have to believe them because you're not under the car. But I also got a text that I say, hi, we have your car here. Please look at this video. And all of a sudden, they had somebody under the car saying, hi, I'm Bob. I'm with your car here. Let me show you here are your brakes. They look pretty good. And all of a sudden they gave me a video tour under the car in there saying, next time you come, I think we should do this because look at the wear here on this tire. It's good. And all of a sudden I had much more confidence because they could see with my own eyes than when I got the handwritten note saying, or the typed bill saying, well, you could use new tires or your brakes have another 10% left. So, that simple thing all of a sudden gave me more confidence. And I like that experience better if I could show me what you're doing. Don't tell me that the X rod is not connected to the Y rod that, is worn out. And
what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that actually takes a couple of your lenses that you say that we should focus on. One is that, like what you were talking about, like using that digital experience. But two, it gives personalization to it. They didn't just show you a general video. It's like, here's what the underside of a car should look like, and it should look like this. And they said, no, here, this is your car, and here are the exact things that I'm seeing in your car.
Right. Tailoring it to somebody. And the Delta app does that too, because telling me the average walk time to gate 846 is 32 minutes is completely irrelevant. It's really going to depend on, is it 10:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock, And so knowing that in real time, this is for me, this is telling me where I'm standing at the airport, if I'm at the Starbucks now, because it's not dependent on you starting at the curb. If you're at the Starbucks and you don't realize that gate 844 is a long way from the Starbucks, it didn't look that far on the sign, it helps you personalize it and tailor it to your experience.
I don't know if the app does this, but then it would be really cool if you could go in and tailor your experience in airports. Hey, Matt, when you're in airports, do you like to stop by Starbucks and get a drink? Do you like to stop by the Wolfgang Puck's place?
This airport has a good, has a good Shake Shack. Do you want to go? I know you like Shake Shack.
Yeah. Not only that, if you were to add a Shake Shack to your itinerary,
how long you have to plan that line is going to be.
Mm-hmm. So the Shake Shack line is currently 2 minutes. Add that to your walking time, and that's going to take you 34 minutes total. Okay, I think I can swing that.
Right. And so that gets at another lens, which is almost going from tailoring to another lens. I have to go see like a concierge. When you go to a hotel and you're lucky enough to go to a nice one, when you go to a less nice one and you say, could any recommendations for dinner? That I can walk to, they'll say, well, here's OpenTable. Let me just click this in And it says this pizza place is about two blocks. What do you think? And that's all right. That's helpful. But if you happen to encounter a better concierge, they'll look at you and say, well, you got two screaming kids. It's really hot outside. Alan, you know, I think you should go to this restaurant. It's only two blocks away. Ask for Mary. She'll sit you in the back where your kids can scream. And so they'll start tailoring and create solving problems for you. You don't even know versus, yeah. You know, here's a restaurant. Hope you're happy.
Oh, there's a couple of pizza places. If it's you and your spouse, this one is great for a romantic dinner for just the two of you. You know,
right.
And it's dark and it's really quiet.
And I've been there. Part of customer service, if you ask people how happy you are with something, what's the average? Okay. No one's going to tell you that for the first concierge, I wouldn't complain and say, well, she only went on open table. That wasn't very helpful. Well, say, all right, fine. Well, you know, for you to share a good experience, which you want from customers, somebody will have to go extraordinary length to do that. They have to give you something more than average.
Right.
Because they only do what's the big problem with customer service is everyone asks, how am I doing? And then, okay. But no one's going to tell people if it's just okay. They're only going to share an experience, as you know, from your days at FedEx, if something phenomenally good happens or something phenomenally bad happens.
Right. Yeah. So it's like I've been married for 18 years now. And I've recognized like one of the things that, you know, if I ask my wife something and I say, well, how was your day? Well, how was this? Well, how are things going? And if she says, okay, or fine, I realize, you know what? Something's actually wrong. I want to make sure that it's really good.
Exactly.
So you don't want your principal to say the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you a funny quick story. We worked for a big pizza company. And we asked them how customers were happy. They said, look, we got good score. People are happy. Went to some research. How happy are you with the pizza? Yes, it tastes good. You know, the crust is. And then a smart moderator said, well, let me ask you one more question, Matt. If this company went out of business, what would you do? Oh, I'd just go to the next one. In other words, so instantly they realized that while it was okay, it was, you know, there was no friction. They would instantly say, oh, I'll just go across the street. So while it was good, it wasn't good enough.
Right. This stat is from, I think, 3 years ago, pre-pandemic. So it's probably increased since then. But I think the stat was that consumers wouldn't care or wouldn't miss 75% of brands if they were to disappear today.
Right. So like I said, two things. One is that the product difference is not that much. But if you're a small business owner or a big company, you're going to have to do something on top of that product difference. Either make it extraordinary, make it better, make it so the cheese was so much better at that pizza place. You know, I never eat anywhere else, which is really hard to do, or do something else for that experience that makes them feel the difference and want to share that difference. Because everyone knows today, the only marketing tool that really matters is word of mouth.
Yeah.
And no one will share, I had an okay, like your wife, no one will share a fine day. No one will share an okay pizza. No one share, well, I flew the airline and they got me to LA. They didn't get lost. It was only an hour late. They'll share, you know, they booked me in another flight. They knew this was going to be canceled and I got there early and then they apologized and they served me a wonderful drink on the plane. Or the alternative, I sat on the runway for 20 hours and no one cared. My phrase in the book is average is over.
Yeah.
And marketers have had a lot of the, this is good enough. This had the check the box mentality. If it was good, well, it was okay. But today, you're better off doing two things really well than five things averagely.
That gets me to thinking about some of the things when we think about employees and employment. A lot of times when we have our annual reviews, we think about, okay, did we meet expectations? Did we not meet expectations? Or did we exceed expectations? And our goal was always, well, we want to make sure that we're exceeding expectations because the ones that exceeded expectations were the ones that, you know, got a higher
got more pizza at the end of the week.
Yeah, that's it. free donuts on Friday. But when it comes to marketers, a lot of times I think that they've got that problem of asking customers, what do you want us to do? And then the customer says, this is what I want. And then the marketer meets that expectation and says, yeah, hooray, we did our job.
And I think that simple thing you bring up, if you just say meets expectation as your GPS thing for your marketing, you won't succeed today. I mean, you won't totally fall off the map. But to be successful, you have to say, where can I exceed people's expectations? Where can I wow them? You can't do it everywhere because you can't be good at everything. But you should think, you know, do I want to wow them? Where can I really wow them based on who my company is and what matters? Because if you wow them in the shopping experience when people buy, they say, you know, oh, I'll applaud you for buying it. That would wow me. People said, great, great purchase, Alan. Headphones, great. But it wouldn't matter. So you got to find the mixture between wowing me in a place that matters.
I think it takes a lot of work to be able to do that and to be able to truly understand who your customer is and understand all their external goals and their internal struggles, internal challenges, and then being able to wow them in those places that matter, that makes them feel like they're valued, that makes them feel like they're known. Wow, this person gets me, or wow, this brand gets me.
Exactly. Another thing you said is so true is marketers still are in the habit of asking, what do you want? You know, do you want the Pizza Hut? And as you know, and I talk about in the book, is part of being a good marketer is, yes, you can ask, is one, asking the right questions, but two, you've got to get more into just watching people and get better at saying, that's funny, Matt is, he looks pretty cranky in that line, but he said everything's fine with the in-store experience. So, you know, the better marketers look at the world through fresh eyes and say, you ever wonder why we asked Matt to put his order in here and then go to this line? And you have to be more of a, you ever wonder why people do that? Let's try something different.
Yeah. You're a parent, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a parent. I've got two boys, 10 and 13. So they're at that preteen and teenage age where they ask the question, why, a lot. So we tell them, all right, we need to do this. You need to be doing this. I need you to do this for me. And they'll say, well, why? Why do I have to do that? And I think they're going to be really great at being able to observe customers and being able to be great at researching and designing customer experience, because I think a lot of it starts with, well, why? Why does it have to be that way?
Right. It's probably the most important word you can have a marketer do is because another syndrome that happens is you get to companies and this is you meet with a team and I've been in the beer business 15 years and that's great. They know a lot, but they also get, this is how we do beer. We do promotion here. And if you don't have somebody coming in and asking, why do you do that? You got to get them off autopilot. In fact, when I was talking years ago to HBO about how do they keep their game, and their game has been generally pretty good in terms of good programming, they tell me they had a program where instead, when you get college interns in the summer and giving them to the junior person and saying, please take care of Matt. He's here for the summer from this university. They gave the college interns to the C-suite. They gave the CEO, and they forced these senior people to interact with 21-year-olds. The job was not so much add up these numbers and I'll see you in August. It was their job as interns was to make sure Matt was getting the why question. Why are you, here's what I'm into. I watched this. So it was a way to keep their senior management fresh and in touch with what young kids were doing. Very relevant for obviously an entertainment company, but almost relevant for every business. And part of the craziness is by the time there's a very famous anthropologist, market researcher named Paco Underhill. And one of his quotes I love was, if you look for the people, the CEO and the C-suite, they're the furthest away from the customer. They're in conference rooms. They're on the 10th floor. They're in meetings all the time. They don't see the customer, yet they're the ones who are responsible. So part of the challenge is getting them to see with fresh eyes and getting them out of the office.
You've seen this recently with Starbucks CEO, their new CEO, and his commitment to spend, I think it's at least one half day every single month actually working as a frontline employee in the Starbucks locations.
And it's great. More CEOs are doing that. And in fact, going back to the beginning, when I started at Unilever, they took me out. They had to do sales training and go with the sales.
Yeah.
But that was at the beginning of my career. If they were doing, maybe they're doing it right now, but you probably should do that every 6 months because things change so much. If you do it 1 year and don't do it for 2 years, you could be looking at apples and oranges.
Yeah, anything that you learned over a year ago was like a stale knowledge.
It's for Wikipedia.
Yeah. So we We have walked through and we've touched on a lot of your different marketing lens, but there's one more that I want to make sure we touch on is focus in and drill down. So to me, a lot of leaders have this mindset of we need to broaden our reach. We need to focus on and execute on more. And when we do that, we'll actually get more. But focus in and drill down is counterintuitive to that.
Right. Everyone say, let's do more. And if more is good, but why focus in and drill down matters is because if you're only average at more, but you could be phenomenally great at less, you're better off being phenomenally great at less. To the other point, old story is for years, people used to get their contact. This is a history lesson for most of you, but you know, if you wear contact lenses like I do, you would go to your optical store and they would give you contact lenses. But they could also sell you glasses. They could also sell, you know, they had everything there. Until somebody leaves the market and say, we want to be the best just for contact users. And this company came, you know, 1-800-CONTACTS, which was before .com. And all they do is contacts. So they were able to do it, have more selection, better price, deliver it faster. So they focused in. Lots of businesses followed. But the lesson there is that even though you may look at the market and where's their opportunity, by focusing into a portion of it, and out executing that portion and just being better at a smaller pie, it's better than trying a bigger pie and not really winning. So lots of opportunities are out there, but if you take that wide angle lens, you won't be better than someone else. But if you could take a narrower view and say, how can I be a better restaurant in this category or even slicing is better in marketing. So focusing in lets you see opportunities that you wouldn't see if you're looking. Well, you know, there are plenty of optical stores. You know, what else can be done? You know, they sell contacts. What else can be done? That's it. You know, what else is there?
And that makes a lot of sense to me because you're able to excel. You're able to create a much better experience, maybe a much better product if at least when you're starting out, if you're known for that one thing. So I know when you were traveling to work with us at FedEx, you traveled to Memphis. I don't know if you ever had a chance to eat at Gus's Fried Chicken there, but I use that example a lot of just focusing in on one thing because you would go in and it was almost a joke. If you looked at their kind of like letterboard menu on the wall every single day, it would say today's special chicken. Because that's all they serve was spicy fried chicken.
And applying that simple principle to marketing, has led to lots of success stories. You know, a couple of years back, this guy invented Calendarly, which was his online site. But you would say, how could somebody independent invent that? You had Microsoft, you had Google, and they all had calendar programs. But he drilled down and said, look, they all have calendar programs. There are dozens of them. But the problem, I want to focus in on people who are self-employed or salespeople who have to reset and reschedule appointments. And so they focused on a particular type of customer and a particular type of self-service calendar that the big players missed because they were trying to do calendars for everybody.
And to me, that's an example of focusing in on solving a problem instead of focusing in on creating a certain product. It's like, well, let's figure out how we solve this problem of you and me going back and forth through email 10 times trying to nail down when our meeting is.
Right. And I'm sure the big players, Google and Microsoft, they ask, what do you want on the calendar? People say, oh, just easy to use and it works on the phone. People wouldn't ordinarily, because they didn't think of that. They wouldn't say, can you solve this problem that Matt keeps on moving my meeting and it takes 20 emails? Yeah. But if you were observing Matt and seeing the stress and talk, and you might even suggest that to somebody designing a calendar. You say, well, I like blue and make sure I double click. But somebody heard that problem and said, I'm going to focus in and drill in on that.
That's what we're going to solve. So there's lots of great ways through your different lenses to look at on how we can create a better customer experience and how we can stand out and differentiate our brands through customer experience. But when we think of marketing, we think of marketers, so much of what a brand delivers throughout the entire customer experience, marketing doesn't own a lot of that. So I'm curious, what can marketers do to enlist the help of everyone else, to enlist the help of all those other functional areas throughout the brand to understand and understand the value and focus on the customer experience?
It's really hard to do, but you know, one step is to make sure your brand promise, what your brand idea, what you want to stand for, is so simple and clear that everyone in the company gets it. And don't run out and do something unless the leadership of the company really gets it. Because while you can, ultimately, there's so many factors that could, because brands are touched by so many things, that if the top people in the company don't get it, you can't deliver that experience just through communication from the marketing group or the brand group. Right. And so you don't start that journey. And I don't want to go back to this, but I will one more time, at least from the outside, and you were in the inside. FedEx brand promise or purple promise was pretty clear, yeah. But it was not only clear to the brand and marketing team. It was when you heard the CEO talk, it was on the screen for the CEO. So it was something was embraced by the whole company and the culture, which gets back to, you know, if you're going to make a promise in any company, you have to know your company culture. You have to know what your company is good at. And if you have a very serious company, you can't have a funny brand. So don't try. In other words, think of what you're offering and make sure your company has the DNA or the strengths or the businesses to deliver it. Because if otherwise you'll promise something, and you have to realize that the best brand experiences are often driven through people, even for products, because something's going to go wrong with that product. And if you go to the Genius Bar and take your phone in, even if they could fix it, but if they're nasty to you, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So you have to have the company culture aligned with your brand story these days.
Excellent. Yeah. And it helps a lot for each employee or each area to understand what the promise means on their team, what the promise means in their role.
As opposed to we're very customer centric and we want to keep the customer satisfied. If you tell that to people, people say, all right, satisfied. I'll make my own definition up.
Yeah.
So you have to be really specific and talk about what experience you want to deliver. You just can't say, we want to deliver an engaging, warm, authentic, and genuine experience. That sounds good on a marketing brief, but then you go to somebody and say, do this. And you go to 10 people, and you get 10 different experiences.
You have to go like, how do I do that? So you've got to be able to help them understand what it means in their role. Well, I've really enjoyed this. I've enjoyed going through your different lessons and lenses. I've got one final question for you, Alan. If you were to create a soundtrack for Seeing the How, what songs would you include?
Well, I just have one because I let Apple Music usually curate what I listen to.
Nice.
But there's an older song, which most of your listeners won't do, but they can look it up. Won't remember, which you look up online. It's called I Can See Clearly Now, The Rain Has Gone by Johnny Nash, I think. And you need that, you know, part of this book is about seeing, you're not inventing things new. Success is about seeing clearly what's going on and seeing it with eyes that can, gee, look at that over there. That's strange. I never noticed that before. And going back to what you said at the beginning, when you walk with young kids on the street, they'll say, Dad, look at that. Dad, look at that.
Yep.
You know, what's that? And get back to that phase, because as you walk down the street, don't be looking at your phone. Start look around and try to say, you know, why is that car double parked there? Just think like a 10-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, get out there, observe the world and ask why.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Alan, I've learned a lot from you, but where can people go to learn more?
You can look me up online, alan@metaphors.com or Alan Adamson, and you'll get to Seeing the How or one of my other books. And, one day, you know, you'll be able to ask ChatGPT, can you do a book like Alan? And you'll have it faster than I could write it.
Hopefully, we won't get to that point. Hopefully, there's still that opportunity to say, okay, now let's make it really a bit more like his lessons. But I'm excited to see like what we're able to do now. But Alan, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time today.
It was a pleasure chatting with you and fun, and enjoyed the summer.
Excellent. I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Alan Adams. You can go and learn more from him at metaphors.com. And if you want to dive deeper into lessons we discussed today, then go and pick up your copy of his book, Seeing the How. If you're enjoying the Simple Brand Podcast, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. It's going to make it so much simpler for you to get future episodes like the next one featuring Evelyn Starr. We'll be talking about lessons from her book, Teenage Waste Brand, how your brand can stop struggling and start scaling. Hey, Teenage Waste Brand? Okay, I've got a pretty good idea on at least one of the songs that'll be in her soundtrack. So go ahead and subscribe. You'll automatically get Evelyn's episode as soon as it's live. Until then, keep it simple.